Welcome to the Sober Rebel Bite Size series for January. This episode is no more than 20 minutes, and there will be one a day throughout the month of January. I've been doing this podcast now for nearly 2 years, and in that time I've spoken to so many amazing guests. So I thought it would be a lovely idea this month to revisit some of the highlights of those conversations every day throughout January to keep you focused on why you're doing this. Today's episode is with Nick, first aired in May 24. Nick talks about sobriety giving him more time and how he feels better able to face things. One of the things we do cover is how sobriety isn't a smooth path, how he's had bumps and resets, and how he had long sober stints, and how exhausting that was mentally. And just a mention that we do discuss an eating disorder in the main episode and in this little preview clip. So if you are triggered by that, please just be aware.
It's always that old storyline is, oh, well, celebration means drinking. You know, that is, you know, that's the go-to thing. And that was when, rather than things like the hangover being the issue and I want to feel better about myself, that was when the drinking behavior itself became a little bit more problematic. We'd be drinking too much, right? You know, and then it sort of broke into a few weeks of this. And then it was, we had some builders doing some work and I'd be like trying to encourage them. You know, must have been the cleanest builders you've ever met, because I was trying to get them all to have drinks on a Friday afternoon so that I could have a drink. And they weren't. They were like, oh, no, it's fine. I'm driving and all this kind of stuff. And I'd still have one anyway. But I was then sort of secret drinking. So I would go to the shops to pick something up and I'd neck a can of pre-mixed cocktail in the car before I came back. And when I'd go out with friends, I would go to buy a round of drinks at the bar and then I would buy myself a shot in the background at the same time. And so those little behaviours started to creep in. So I thought, oh, this is not what I wanted it to be. So then I took another break. And obviously this is going to sound repetitive, but I wanted to give an idea to your listeners of the fact that these journeys sometimes aren't instantaneous. And it's not that everyone gets to a bottom, because I don't think I really hit some sort of bottom where anything was hugely at risk, maybe. I mean, maybe you can tell me, but the idea that you just decide to stop is sort of unrealistic. And if
I think it's very rare. I really do think it's quite rare. I don't talk to many people that just decided to stop. You know, maybe they got to a point where they had to. But when you haven't got to the point where you have to, because people are breathing down your neck or you have to join a program, it can be actually quite hard. What you're almost doing in those cycles of sobriety is you're lulling yourself into a false sense of security that I've got this. This is fine. Exactly. And then you're getting that fading effect bias, that romanticizing alcohol, or I want to celebrate.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's the best way to do it.
Yeah. Ultimately, I'm creating like the most extreme form of moderation that there is, which is 3 months off, 2 weeks on, 3 months off, 2 weeks on.
That's exhausting. And, I mean,
it's really severe. Because psychologically, you start thinking, God, what, like, you know, that's when you start getting quite depressed, you know, because then you don't keep promises to yourself to an extreme level. You're like, right, I'm going to stop drinking for 6 months, 3 months in, have a drink. You convince yourself we need to do this. And like you said, because no one's breathing down your neck, it's not like my wife's going, he's a heroin addict. So if I see him doing heroin, then we've got a problem. It's more a case of he's trying to be healthy. You know, all these phrases, none of them were ever addicts, alcoholic. It was always, he's trying to be good. And it's that thing, isn't it? Good and bad. he's trying to be good. So that's fine. But if he turns around and says, oh, I'm going to have a drink this weekend, then great.
There's no argument, is there? There's no issue. There's no problem. Not from the outside. And if you say as you were sort of doing secret behaviours of shots, or then people won't know. And we're actually really good.
Because, you know, I mean, the reason you keep it secret probably is because you're embarrassed, right? Because especially when you've given the impression to others, you know, because at this time, a lot of people that I knew, the only time they'd ever see me, I'd be sober.
And so it was like really short bursts of drinking, wasn't it? Yeah,
exactly. And a lot of it was done at home, you know, especially during COVID and everything. So for all intents and purposes, everyone thinks you're sober, right? So then you've got this kind of you feel like a fraud because you're telling people that you don't drink, but then you do and stuff. You know, it makes you a liar, really. And then sort of fast forward a little bit after COVID, they've got to periods where that cycle, when I was having a drink, my hangovers were so extreme that I would then wake up in the morning and have a drink. And so it got to the point where, because of the fact that it's like, all right, Saturday morning, I can't handle this, I shouldn't have done it, almost like this kind of fuck it response, I've already had a drink. So, and then I do things like sort of fill a water bottle up, or not water bottle, but like a Coke bottle up with vodka and Coke, and then take my kids to football practice. And I'd be stood on the sidelines with the parents drinking a bottle of vodka and Coke. That's the type of behavior that people would say that's alcoholic behavior, right? And so I'd almost created that monster in myself rather than just realizing that I needed to stop. I was taking breaks and then coming back. And like you said, it was exhausting. And what really helped me was actually is that I've always had disordered eating issues. And I think they all come from the same place. You know, this is trying to control yourself and trying to numb feelings and all that kind of stuff. And I joined a 12-step program, but for eating disorders called EDA.
Is it Eating Disorders Anonymous? Is that what
Yeah,
it
that's right.
stands for?
Yeah. I label myself as someone who has an eating disorder, but who is more generally an addict. Because I mean, even like I said to you in COVID, in that time when I wasn't drinking, I was still working out twice a day. And I was still getting to the point where if I missed one session, I would fit it in on Sunday morning. So instead of spending time with my kids, I'd go to the gym again. Even though it was the ninth time that week, it was like, you know, I probably could have taken a break. And so what I've realized through doing the 12-step work, because actually it's not religious at all, like I expected, you know, and you'll have listeners that have done programs, but the fundamental is admitting that you've got a bit of a problem, and then realizing that you need to have a better perspective, and the perspective is effectively when you do everything for yourself, you become selfish and self-centered, and that's when you sort of reach for these old coping mechanisms and stuff. You know, you need something that's more important than you, you know, and to me, that's my family, and you know, and the kind of spirit of being alive that you get from being sober, even though it was related to eating disorders. And I've used it to sort of regulate my eating. And my eating disorder is binge eating, which is sort of, I feel a bit embarrassed sometimes to say eating disorder, even though within the groups, I'm totally accepted. But you do get that impression, you know, when people think eating disorders, they think of anorexics and people that are sort of dangerously damaging their health. But much like with alcohol, if it has an effect on your mental health and it gets in the way of you living your life, then you've got a problem. And it doesn't matter if it's binge eating or only having a couple of drinks a week. The work is to look at all the things like in your backstory and childhood and how you react with people, and just being aware that, oh, sometimes I can be a bit of an arsehole in this way, or sometimes I'm like this. So that when feelings come up, you don't go to the, oh, let me have a drink to sort of feel better. You pick the next right thing. You pick the thing that serves your family better. And I know now that it doesn't serve my family to sort of binge eat and go within myself, or to secretly drink. And like, you think you're Mr. Party Man in the kitchen going, come on, kids. You know, I cringe because I picture it now. Like, you think you're being the most fun dad ever, and you're just trying to get them up dancing. Come on, let's dance around the kitchen. Look at all this. You know, you can stay up as late as you want. Like, you're acting like Mr. Personality, but you're not there at all. Like, I'm not there at all. And the kids know that. They can sense it. They're just like, oh, you know, get away from me. Because of the work I'd done with the steps, I was able to kind of take a much more relaxed approach to stopping. And actually, I know that I don't need to drink to have a good personality or to be talkative. And yeah, but interestingly, even though I even did a full year once, you know, but when I turned 40, you know, I've still never had a sober holiday. And so that's the one thing at the moment. I've got a holiday coming in 4 weeks, and it's always all inclusive. And the first thing they say, and when you look at the all inclusive, it's like premium spirits, premium wine, and all this kind of stuff. But I'm really looking forward to not being sat by the pool telling my kids to go away and swim because I'm sleeping a hangover off. I want to actually experience the holiday. So I'm excited about that.
That's amazing. And so, do you think this is? I know we can never say never, and we don't say never, but is this an intention for you now?
Now, what's happened over the time period is that, like I said, you open Pandora's box a little bit. And now what it is I see the bad in the drinking. Before it was drinking's all right, but sober's better. Now it's drinking should be avoided at all costs, because if I was to die tomorrow, I wouldn't want to spend my last day hungover. So I don't want to spend any of my days hungover. It's more like that. It's more of a kind of, I've become more vehemently against the drinking.
Yeah, and I think that helps, doesn't it? When you stop glamorizing, and we put moderation on a pedestal, we put this idea that we are going to somehow achieve this holy grail of moderation and it's all going to be excellent, and alcohol's on a pedestal and we should be able to integrate it into our lives in a normal way. And it just doesn't work like that. I mean, you've only got to step back and start looking at it as a highly addictive, highly available drug that is really difficult to walk away from and to break those bonds. So the fact
Yeah, and
you've done
there's
it so
no
many
shame in it.
times, no shame whatsoever. It's no more than if somebody said to me, oh, I'm smoking and I'd like to give up. I think it's amazing when people say, actually, this isn't serving me anymore.
You never know where it's going to lead, right? I mean, not that I can name them, but I know someone who's been in rehabs for drinking, and they were just this normal social person, and all it takes is sort of a damaging element of, like an event or a trauma or something.
Something
And
happening.
you don't know where you could end up. Like it
It's a
is
slippery
that,
slope, isn't it? You just
yeah,
don't know
of
how
course.
slippery it is or where you are on it or how long it is. And you just don't know if something happens that were to pull the rug from under you. You need some good coping strategies,
Yeah, and
you
that's
know.
what it is. It's like if you've got healthy coping strategies already and you occasionally have a couple of glasses of wine, I mean, if it's not troubling you, I mean, I'd prefer to not, but if it's not troubling you, then you're not really the audience that we're talking to. Unfortunately, it's the people who say things like, oh, I've got a new rule. I have two glasses of wine on a night out, and that's it, unless I have a glass of water, and then I'm allowed one more glass. And you're like, who's doing this fucking maths? Like
Yeah, I mean, it's
on a night
mentally
out.
exhausting,
It's
you know.
knackering, and when you're drunk, that all goes out the window. It's like you just watch it all the time. It's like, because we're very clever and we're very manipulative creatures, right? And my brain will get around it one way or another. If I'm allowed one drink, it's going to be a quintuplet vodka and Coke. Whatever I can get away with, it's going to be that. So it's actually much easier to make the decision not to drink at all, because you've made the one decision rather than making hundreds. Like that decision, I don't know whether you used to have it, where it's like Wednesday lunchtime, you're thinking, right, am I busy at work tomorrow? Maybe I could have a drink tonight, but only a couple because I need to get to bed. And then you're just thinking about it, and then you have those drinks, and maybe you have a few too many, and then the next day you're like, oh, a bit hungover, maybe all the other, and you're just constantly making decision after decision after decision. And the more times you make decisions where you said you weren't, but you do. You're not acting authentically, and you end up breaking those promises to yourself. And that's the bit that really was pulling on my heartstrings, because it just feels awful. And what I love is that sober movement's obviously growing. I think there's a lot of young people don't drink. Like my kids say to me now, I don't ever want to drink, and that's fine. It's also bullshit. They will try alcohol. There's no doubt about it. But the fact that it started out like this, rather than my stepdad is an alcoholic, so booze wasn't really glamorized in the house necessarily, but I certainly was around people where the adults glamorized it to the kids. It was just like, well, go on then, you can have a little beer if you want, you can have this when you get older, and when you turn 18, we're going to go out and get you pissed. And it was the kind of parents teasing the kids because they had hangovers and stuff. I think that's fading away a bit. And when you see people like, I won't name them, but there's some influencers out there who used to be like, come on, let's all get on the gear and get drunk. Ha ha ha. Look how amazing this is. And now even they're all turning around and going, actually, I've stopped that because, and then now they're sort of preaching about how great it is to be sober. So, hopefully, if enough people from different demographics and different lifestyles give the message, then at least people have got a bit more information than just, well, you have to have a drink.
They're starting from a different point, aren't they?
When you're young and you try alcohol, for example, and it's rancid, obviously, because
It is vile.
it's the only thing that people claim to enjoy that you need, 6 months of practice at before you start liking it.
That
You
is
know?
so true. I keep saying I do not like the taste of alcohol, and people go, "Oh, I love a Chardonnay." I'm like, "You don't.
Yeah,
You
I mean,
really
yeah,
don't."
there's some alcohols that you know they're so heavily sugared. There's nothing for me that's more flavoursome in the alcohol world, like a cherry Pepsi Max is. You know,
Yeah.
I can't think of, or that like a fresh glass of orange juice, like sat by a pool.
Yeah, or a
I
cup of
can't,
tea. I mean,
like,
you cannot beat a cup of tea.
obviously, I still work in the stockbroking industry, and you see some of the money that gets spent on nights out and stuff, and people are spending, you know, hundreds of pounds on bottles of tequila because it's got a certain label on it. Like tequila is absolute, it doesn't matter where, what one it
I've
is, it's
never had it. Is that the one with the
rancid.
worm in the bottle?
Traditionally, yeah, but there's things like Don Julio, which is this like really expensive thing. It's like $200 a shot and stuff, and people are doing it to show off, and it literally tastes like sort of drain
It's a
killer.
total status symbol, isn't it?
It t TV doesn't really help because, like I said, like we were shocked. I said to my wife the other day, I think we were watching, I don't know what it was. I think it was Kin or one of these kind of sort of dramas on BBC, and it was like every single scene was in a bar with people drinking. In the kitchen with the family having a glass of wine, or in a sort of like man-to-man discussion, like with a shot of whiskey, you know. And
Yeah.
then even when you were seeing it from the police's perspective, they're having a shot of whiskey while they discuss the case, or you know, drinking a bottle of wine while they're sort of like working through the numbers. And I was just like, honestly, if I sat there and drank a bottle of wine while I was like working on a case, like everyone would just get away with the murders because I would, there's no way that I'd be focused. I wouldn't be focused. I'd be going, oh, well, we'll do that in a minute. Let's talk about my new business idea. Let's, have you seen this music video? I'd just be sat doing that till 2 in the morning. And then the chief inspector would be like, how have you got on? And I'd be like, I don't know.
They got away with it.
They got away with it.
If you'd like to listen to the whole episode, then head back to the 28th of May on your podcast timeline and look for Nick, episode 20. If you'd like to find out more about working with me, then head to my website, louisaevans.com. I don't just support with sobriety, I also help with many other areas, including anxiety, overthinking, and low mood. On the website, you'll find lots of resources, including my online Sober Resilience course, and if you use the code RESILIENCE544 as a Sober Rebel listener, you'll get a 30% discount. And also a range of hypnosis recordings. Use code SOBERREBEL, all one word, to buy one, get one free. Self-hypnosis is a very powerful and effective way to begin to reprogram how we automatically think about things. You'll find a range of different topics on my website. I'd like to take this opportunity to thank all of my guests on the Sober Rebel podcast for sharing their story. And for taking the time to talk to me. The Sober Rebel podcast will be back very soon. I'm just currently recording some fantastic episodes to share with you. I hope you have a good day.